Who's this wiry, sun-kissed, sunburned, salty sea dog over here? Why, it's Ben.
Hello.
Welcome back, Ben.
Thank you.
Did you blind the Cyclops in a cave and cling to the belly of a sheep to escape?
It looks like you did.
You seem to have befallen yourself of an injury.
You've been wrestling whales again.
It was battling the Cyclops in the cave that it happened, but I've broken my arm.
A boo. Oh well, despite Ben's injury, we will struggle on, I'm sure, with podcast series 4, episode 8. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Efrain Hernandez.
I'm Jonathan Roberts.
I'm Ben Efrard.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And with such tenuous Greek Odysseus-based nonsense, we come to... what do we come to? We come to the contents of this episode, which is going to be the news, discovery of the week... the halfway reminder, which isn't really content, it's more like signposting, rants and raves, speak your brains, and the open ballot. I should also remind you that if you are a Linux Format reader, in fact if you're not a Linux Format reader, you can subscribe to Linux Format at http://, oh no, I missed a colon out there, tinyurl.com/lxfoffer1. And we have found out what that deal is. It's a very good one. It's £59.99 for 13 issues, which is a saving of around £84.50 on what you pay in
the
shops.
Incredible.
But even better than that is the deal you get if you pay quarterly by direct debit. This is actually cheaper. It's only £51.92 for a whole year.
Amazing.
Which is, I don't know, whatever, 84. So it's bargainous anyway. It's great.
It is great.
So subscribe, keep us all in a job, and yes, if you don't, the first to be fired will be John, who's going to read the news now.
Me? Oh. Well, time for the news, I guess. EA and Ubuntu have a little tie-up going on where EA have put in two games into the Ubuntu Software Center, Lords of Ultima and CC Tiberian Alliances. It's, what do you guys think?
Ancient games.
They're ancient games, but they're also not native.
They're not ancient enough. I'd like to see NHL hockey and John Madden's American football.
Good games.
Finite.
I know that they're... I don't have any problem with them being accessible through the software center. I think, as usual, the hype that surrounded Canonical's announcement of it was just disproportionate to the news, saying that EA were going to be at the Ubuntu Developers Conference.
Yeah.
And, okay, knowing EA, we didn't expect anything big, but it still would have been nice if there had been some proper native conversions to Linux.
For the size of the announcement, definitely. So, and Ben, what do you think?
Like you said, it's a fairly small step, but it's the first step, and hopefully it'll lead on to bigger things in the future.
I guess if these games are running for browser, then if that's the direction EA is going in, that means more games for Linux users, full stop. So that's cool. Effie, Andrew?
I'm not really a gamer, so I don't really know what the relevance is. Some games on the Ubuntu Software Center are great, I suppose.
Running in a browser from 15 years ago. How much are they?
I have no idea, actually.
Are they free? Are they?
I think.
Well, if they're free, then it's awesome.
Wow.
Yep.
Linux, yeah, then that's cool.
Linux company ties up with big, successful maker of games. Fine.
Most widely hated games company.
Yes, but to be widely hated, you have to be successful.
That's true.
It's the most widely hated Linux distribution, I think, at the moment as well.
Match made in heaven. Okay, great. So next story. According to Mozilla, Windows on ARM in the classic mode only, Windows RT, this is, will only support Internet Explorer. It won't support Mozilla, Firefox, or any other web browser.
Hang on. I don't really understand the significance. Does that mean that they lock down Windows RT completely and you can't run unsigned applications on it, full stop?
I guess so. I'm not 100% sure. No. I know you'll be able to run Firefox in Metro mode as an app. Mm. It's in the classic mode, in the desktop mode, where you won't be able to use Firefox or any other browser.
Oh, I was talking to Graham about this. I suppose it is expected, isn't it? It's still a Windows operating system, so you expect to have an Internet Explorer just as much as you probably expect Safari to be on a Mac operating system.
But you wouldn't expect it to prohibit any other browser. You know, this is like going back to, what, 2001?
Yes. I totally, I mean, not even Apple does it anymore, even though they used to.
Yeah.
Didn't Microsoft get into a whole load of antitrust trouble for this a few years back?
Yeah, and depending on how substantially different the code is, this potentially does violate the European ruling on it and the whole browser choice issue. So
I don't actually, the thing is, I don't understand, I haven't read about it, so I don't actually understand why they're doing it. There might be a good reason for it.
So we can expect another 497 billion, million, bajillion euro fine coming Microsoft's way then.
We can look forward to it.
Awesome.
It's another reason not to choose Microsoft's ARM platform.
Yeah. I do think it does look like it'll be cool on the tablet, but this kind of thing just... I recently put a post on TuxRadar saying how I've been impressed by Microsoft and maybe I spoke too soon.
That is the mad thing, like with the UEFI thing, the locking down the ARM platform for Windows Mobile. They don't need to do it. Windows Mobile, it looks good anyway.
Yeah.
It just looks nice.
Yeah, compete on your own merits. Yeah. Don't lock out other people.
Just such bad karma.
If you want to make people use Internet Explorer, make it better.
And it is better though, right? It's one of the things. It's gotten so much better. And its market share is increasing. Anyway, moving on. Chris Kenyon, not Peter Kenyon, Chris Kenyon, has claimed that Ubuntu will ship on 5% of PCs worldwide next year. That's about 18 million units.
Is he like their product manager or something?
Director of business development, perhaps?
Yeah. He's on the board. He's
Something like that.
This is another massive
canonical hype.
I don't know where they get it from.
It's interesting that alongside this announcement, no one's been talking about Shuttleworth's goal for 200 million users by, when was it,
2015?
Canonical just need to take a step back and make more measured announcements. You know, it's great if they do ship on 5% of PCs worldwide. That's really cool.
That's what we said when Shuttleworth made his 200 million announcement. You know, they do it, awesome. But they've said this time and time.
Tell us when you've done it. Tell us when you've done it.
I think this might be sort of a sort of UK perspective might be a bit different here, because obviously the big push seems to be in China with the partnership with Dell.
I mean, this story originally that came from Phoronix, and one of the things they said was that there's a lot of reports from Chinese, computer distributors that users buy them with Ubuntu on, wipe it and put on pirated versions of Windows. So this isn't necessarily a measure of Ubuntu's installed base growing or Linux installed base growing. But either way, if they are making money out of it, then cool.
Yeah. And the chances are, if you at least turn it on and have a look before you wipe it and put Windows on.
Or two new users might be picked up that way.
Yeah.
Unless Linux in this case is being used as some kind of money laundering mechanism for, you've got to buy a PC with an OS on it so that you're not pirating Windows, at least in the government's eye, so they just wipe it off with them as soon as they get it, and it's a way of Dell selling more machines.
Yeah.
GNOME 3.6 may see the reintroduction of the shutdown button.
Well, big news this then.
When would that be out?
Well, okay, so this, I'm not sure, we're on 3.4 now. Yeah. I think we're on 3.4 now. 3.2?
So by the end of 3.4? The year, maybe.
So by the end of the year.
By GNOME 4.0, there'll be a shutdown button.
Yeah, but the really funny thing about this is it came in the comments to an update from the designer, Alan Day, talking about how, they're designing new applications, changing the lock screen and all of that. And all of this is quite attractive design work. But it's completely mad is that in the comments where someone says about this and he says, we're working on something, he says, we're trying to find a solution. What the solution is, you add a button to the drop-down menu that says shutdown. That's all there is to it.
See, that is the problem. My electricity bill is massive. I mean, I can't shut my computer down.
You should write and complain.
Send them the bill.
Yeah.
I will.
Anyone else have any strong feelings about this besides it being...
I strongly believe there should be a shutdown option in the menu.
Yes, it's confused me many a time.
That's it, really.
I can't believe they say they're looking for a solution.
Yeah.
It's obvious what the solution is. There's no solution to look for unless they come out with something amazing and, knock my socks
unless
off and I take my words
back. You can just think and make it happen with the power of your mind.
That would be cool.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. So if that's a solution, I'm all for it. But otherwise, add a button. Linux format censored by Barnes & Noble.
Oh, this was a big story last week, wasn't
it? I think it was probably the biggest Linux story of the week.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
What are we allowed to say?
I don't know. looking at you, Graham.
I don't know. We actually wrote pretty much everything that we knew about it on the TuxRadar post. We don't know any more than that. We were told that somebody had complained, and as a result, the Mac, that issue was pulled from Barnes & Noble. And we only found out last week. I mean, there wasn't any, there was nothing undercurrent about the fact that it was from issue 154 or something. That's the only time we found out, because we don't actually find out about sales figures from the US until a couple of months afterwards.
How long had had the issue been on sale for in Barnes & Noble before they pulled it from the shelves?
A few weeks.
A few weeks.
Yeah.
So it's quite a futile gesture from Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, yeah.
We already enjoyed quite a few sales. And
yeah, in the US, apparently, the magazine stays on the shelves for something like 6 weeks. So I don't know. I don't know exact numbers. I can't say.
What's been really fun about this is, I know we did push it a little bit with the cover, but what's been really fun is the big difference that the asterisk next to Don't Be Evil makes, because some people see the cover and they see, oh, you need to be evil. And then they're like, this is terrible. Obviously it should be bored. They're inciting this. And then you see the asterisk and it immediately makes it tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, I suppose it's an example. Well, it's strange that if it is one person, that one person can actually have that much weight.
Yeah.
And it's also one of those examples where perhaps British humour doesn't transfer
to 100% America.
To America.
You guys should look forward to your trip to Portland, Oregon. Yeah. Well, in a few months' time.
Of course, Beat the CIA is just about to go on sale in the US.
It's kind of interesting.
So
it's on the Nook store now. I checked before coming over.
We mean beat the CIA as in mean be better than the CIA.
Exactly what we mean.
Find a stick and an agent.
What I mean is, obviously no one from Barnes & Noble actually read the article before they put the magazine off the shelves. That's a little bit silly, I'll say.
But anyway, that's the news.
It's now time for our Discovery of the Week section, where we tell you what we have discovered over the last 2 weeks. Does anyone want to go first?
I don't mind going first.
He's going to go first.
I've been away for too long.
Yeah, this is your first podcast in a month or 6 weeks.
Yeah, more or less. I was ill. I wasn't very well. And then I was on holiday first. And then
Hangover.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, I go to Discoveries and they're a bit musical. I recently bought a guitar for one of my girls.
Of
my daughters, to be precise. I was gonna buy digital chromatic tuner for the guitar, and then it suddenly occurred to me that there might be some application out there in Google Play to download, and then I find a free one, not a pirate one, so don't.
Sorry, don't look at me. Commenting okay.
About that, I'm just the master of piracy or something like that. It's called G Strings, and it's a chromatic tuner for any kind of strings instrument, guitar.
On your
Android phone, and it's just brilliant because it's free, and the range of price between and real digital chromatic tuners range from, I don't know, £5 to £60 more or less. So it's an absolute cracker because it's really good, and it can also recognize you whistling, because Graham was whistling earlier on, so you can recognize which notes you are actually whistling at,
which is important.
The phone, which is important, yeah. Especially if it's important if there's a whistling in the song, you really want to get it just
for wind
right.
to change,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, it's called G Strings. It's lowercase G, capital S, Strings.
Yeah, I suppose you've got to be careful with that.
Absolutely. Right.
You could get some unexpected results searching Google for that.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And the other one was, it's another Android app called Perfect Piano, which, coincidentally, was just about to buy a piano as well for my older daughter. And I earn a lot of money.
You're like the Von Trapp family, aren't they?
Eh?
You're like the Von Trapp family.
No, it's more like the Patrick's family.
They're more like the Jacksons.
Like the Jackson family.
Again.
Perfect Piano. And it's a really nice little application that probably will work better in a tablet just because of the size of the screen. But it's brilliant because it teaches you how to play piano, and it comes with preloaded songs that you can follow as well, and it's also free. So I think Android and on tablets and mobile phones is actually fantastic.
Awesome. Excellent.
There you go.
When are you going to get an Android tablet?
Probably this month. I decided not to buy it.
Are you going to get that Scroll Extreme?
Yeah.
Oh, that looks so good.
I can't remember the specs. You read the spec sheet.
It was really good. It was about equal, a bit better than the iPad 2 spec.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was, what, £170?
£169, yeah.
With a capacitive touchscreen from eBuyer. It looks great. I would love to get one as well.
It comes with the latest Android.
Yeah, ice cream sandwich.
Ice cream sandwich. Yeah. Which looks really good, by the way.
The whole thing looks fantastic.
So I might go for that one. Yeah. Yeah, so Perfect Piano, which, funny enough, when you download it and you install it on your mobile phone, it changes to Piano Perfect rather than Perfect Piano. I don't understand, someone made a mistake on the development of the application, but it's really good anyway. And you can, on the application, you can have two keyboards as well, and contains a full keyboard, full piano keyboard, so you can scroll left and right on your screen to get to the far left and the far right. That sounded really political, didn't it? The far left and far right keys. So, yeah, Perfect Piano.
Awesome.
Brilliant things. Very musical.
Well, I'll go next, because actually I didn't realise, but mine's very similar. Mine is the release of a piece of software called Piano Tech 4 for Linux. Now, I discussed Piano Tech 3, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago when it came out, and it's the most awesome sounding piano synthesizer. It's expensive. I haven't looked at the prices, but I think the basic version might be £100. It goes up to a pro version. But rather than using samples, which is what nearly every piano playing synthesizer does, it actually uses mathematics to reconstruct the physical attributes of various pianos.
Wow.
But almost everything about it, from the way the strings interact with one another and the keys and the reverberation in the box itself, down to the harmonics generated by different frequencies vibrating with one another. Everything, every aspect of a piano is created. And the result is that the sound of the piano is just incredible. If you've got a decent keyboard with lots of velocity, so that you can change the dynamic range of the piano sound, you get a much more realistic, much more varied and dynamic sound out of the Piano Tech than you do out of a sampler, which can, say for example, may only have like 12 or 60 samples for different velocities. The Piano Tech, being a physically modeled piano, can do any and all variations in between. And you can also edit the pianos yourself, and it comes with models that they've created based on famous pianos. And it's only small, and it doesn't take up too much CPU power, so it's a fantastic piece of software if you're interested in piano. Get a weighted keyboard, which costs about £350, a copy of Piano Tech, and you've got a grand piano in your living room running on Linux.
It's really cool.
That's my discovery.
You could probably combine that with a Raspberry Pi if it doesn't use too much, or would it not be compiled?
No, I don't think there's an ARM version.
Well, I think what you should do, you should use it and record and video yourself and put some sort of video sample on
try and get on the voice. Yeah. Anyone else?
Shall I go next?
Okay.
It's not very technical, but this week I've been discovering the French Health Service.
How's it compared to the NHS, Ben?
It's been a while since I've been to the NHS, but it was actually quite good. But just to fill you in, listeners, I was away for a week sailing around the Med. And on
as you do.
As you do.
You overachiever.
Indeed. Anyway, the first day, or the first night, was a crossing from Nice to Corsica. It's about 100 miles.
Yeah, of course it was.
And about, none of us are bitter about this.
And it was quite light winds and quite heavy seas. And about 4 hours into it, I was thrown from one side of the boat to the other and hit the oven and broke my arm. And anyway, sort of kept going. And
anyway, you just sort of kept going.
Yeah.
Was the oven hot?
No, it would have been very bad if it was on, because I properly folded over the top of it.
Do you mean you tripped over a supermodel and landed on a crate of champagne?
So anyway, I broke my arm, and a few days later, I finally got round to going to hospital.
It took you 3 days to get to hospital.
It wasn't that painful. So I was like, oh, it's probably just a bruise. And also, what may have influenced my decision is I didn't actually have any health insurance, which is quite foolish. But anyway, so eventually I went to hospital, and there was a bit of a wait before I got seen by a doctor. But once I did it, it was straight through. Got into the doctor, he took me straight to radiology. 5 minutes later, we had the x-ray, straight back to the doctor. Yep, broken, cast on, out the door in 15 minutes. It was...
Wow.
That's amazing.
It was brilliantly efficient. and they didn't charge me for it, which I was amazed about as well. So yeah, thumbs up for the French health system.
France sounds ace.
I really wish I'd gone before then.
But they don't have to charge you, isn't it? Because is there some sort of deal between the UK and France?
Have you got the E111 card?
Yeah, I had mine, but they didn't ask to see it. They just took a photocopy of my passport and that was it. So, merci.
Très bien.
Fucker bleu.
Formidable. Did they give you some magic potion?
Yeah, I did. It made me incredibly strong.
Well, he was waiting as well. He got a baguette, some cheese, and a bottle of wine.
Yeah, and had a string of onions as well. And what's even better is I wasn't taken off the plane by men in black complaining about hacking articles.
Yes. Cool, thanks, Ben. John?
Mine feels really inadequate right now. But I saw on the Planet Ubuntu this morning that the Debian sysadmin's handbook has been published.
Oh, okay.
It looks really comprehensive, and it does look good if you're interested in that. But yeah, it's mine. Andrew.
Sit.
My discovery is the No to Monk's Cross 2 campaign. You can find their website at campaign4york.co.uk, and the 4 is like a number 4.
Like Prince.
Yeah. Prince says no to Monk's Cross 2.
What is Monk's Cross 2?
Monk's Cross 2 is a large out-of-town shopping area. It was similar in size to Meadow Hall, which is an enormous out-of-town shopping centre in Sheffield.
Right.
And Meadow Hall had a predictably dire effect on the town centres of Sheffield and Doncaster and Rotherham, because it sucked a lot of trade away. So there's this campaign to not have that happen in York. Which just seems like lunacy that anybody's even entertaining the prospect of building another one of these monstrosities.
Shop online instead.
Well, but it's even worse that it's in York, which is one of our one of the best places in the world. So you know, write an email or send a letter or whatever it is to the planning department. The details are all there on the website. It's Michael Jones at York Council, and just let him know that it's a silly idea. It's time for the halfway reminder. We're about halfway through. Still to come, we have Rants and Raves, which this fortnight is being supplied by John and Graham. We have Speak Your Brains, Open Ballots, and we might even have one last thing. Excellent.
So it's time for Rants and Raves, which says JR on the menu.
Yes, so it's me. So time for Rants and Raves, that time when we speak for a minute about something we hate and something we love. And I guess we start with something raving so that we end on a high and say something good about something. So that
Which is which? Rant is good or rant is...
We start ranting and raving. Sorry, my mistake.
It's the internet age, they're both the same.
Yeah, damn, language changes. So, Graham, you're going to start off ranting.
Yeah, I am, you're right.
I can time you if you like, put it here.
Okay, that's cool.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Go.
Right, so I spent at least 3 days last week installing the latest release of Myth TV. Myth TV is probably the most awesome and incredible digital recording television system you can install, and it runs on Linux, and it is brilliant. You can use it to record multiple channels off multiple sources all at once and stream television to any television, any set-top box, laptop, tablet in your house. It's truly a brilliant thing. But it is a nightmare to install. Actually using the setup utility takes you right back to about 1998, where you have to guess at values and put things in, wait 20 minutes to see if they've worked, and then go back again. Actually adding channels from a DVB card is a nightmare because there are no such values on the internet. You have to type things in. You don't know if it's been accepted. It's only one of the things that it actually uses to configure Myth TV. There are 4 or 5 different layers like this. It's terrible. What they should do is they should have a preset system where you say you're in the UK, you want to watch Freesat television, click a button and it goes, and you have an awesome system from the get-go.
That was 1 minute exactly. That's impressive.
I could easily have carried on.
Yeah, I know. You really, it was painful.
I did a bit in the review.
Yeah. look out for Graham's review of MIF TV. What version is it?
0.25. I mean, it's a major release, but that's what they call it.
So MIF TV 0.25 in the next issue of Linux format.
Quarter of one.
Now my turn. Yeah, excellent. Cool. I really want to rave about open educational resources and all of the cool learning things you can find online for free about almost anything. So, you know, I love Linux and technology and stuff. So things like the Root Guide, the Debian Sysadmins Handbook, but also Coursera and the Stanford online courses, Structure and Interpretation of Compute Programs, Little Schema, Learn Python the Hard Way. The list is massive, all of the things you can go out and learn computer science and programming through. And computing generally is really, really good. I'm saddened that there's not more resources about different subjects, but I think in time the internet will change all that. So, you know, look forward to MIT Ed, where you're going was edX with MIT and Harvard coming together, just first rate universities, top universities giving away their courses for free, so anyone can learn no matter what their background, no matter what point in life they're getting started. If you're ever bored, if you've got time to kill, if you're ever unemployed, don't sit around doing nothing, go and learn a new skill and do it for free online. It's fantastic.
That's brilliant. A really good thing. Have you seen iTunes U?
Which is that's also very good. Yeah,
and but it's a portal to all of those kind of things.
Yeah.
So places like Stanford publish their course material on there, and it's really great to have it all in one place. We should be able to do something like that for Linux.
There are resources like that. Other sites
that
like
bring
that.
All of those kind of.
I think so.
Resources.
There are websites that try to do it, but not very well.
No,
but that is a great idea for a website. Coursera is a bit like that,
right,
to be
honest.
Yeah. That's quite interesting, and there's some humanities and stuff as well, and some arts, so worth checking out.
That's going to put the Open University.
Well, no, they right publish off. Their they publish there, their course material. They, yeah. Certainly, they do on iTunes U.
Yeah,
but they're free. I mean, you normally pay for the courses at the Open University.
You can the Open University. You get a qualification, and you get a personal tutor, and you go to classes, and you meet up and stuff. Whereas this is very much, at least at the minute, a very individual thing.
Well, the last course I did was online.
Okay.
You talk to the tutor online by email and so on and so on and through the website, but you still have to pay for it.
Right, interesting.
So it's time for Speak Your Brains. I've had two fantastic Speaking Your Brains, the last couple of weeks. In fact, they all arrived yesterday. They both arrived yesterday. Right, so the first one is from Gary. He says, "Hi there, Graham of Linux Format. I'm a 15-year-old Linux user, youngling programmer, almost web developer, and socially awkward school person. As a school person, it makes me wriggle inside that I have to be forced through this falling apart education system. My IT classes are not really IT classes, they are let's teach the younglings to be dependent on Microsoft garbage classes. I'm taught by a fat, balding whale of a woman..." Who believes... I shouldn't have actually said his name, should I? I'll cut that out. who believes the internet works with frequencies, and my curriculum consists of making Microsoft PowerPoints, making Microsoft Excel spreadsheets, and creating Microsoft Office Word documents, all on Microsoft's buggy patent-ridden operating system. I do not dispute that the world of today needs someone who is able to sit in an office and write formulas and spreadsheets, but why do we need to be taught this with Microsoft's stuff by a woman who knows only Microsoft? As I'm doing my GCSEs this year, here's a real exam question from a paper I was given for revision. A school uses a spreadsheet software package to calculate tuck shop profits. Tuck shop, American listeners, is a little shop at school you can buy crisps from. Tick one disadvantage of this over a calculator, pen and paper. A, the wrong prices may be input. B, the formulas may be wrong. C, you can carry the pen and paper with you. D, the data may be corrupted by a virus. That was the right answer, apparently.
What, D?
Yeah.
You can tell it's a Microsoft-based exam question.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll skip through the last paragraph. So the moral is, we younglings aren't stupid and we can learn meaningful IT, and the MS education system is making us all Bill Gates slaves. We are being taught only to use software, and I wouldn't mind that too much if it weren't for being taught only to use Microsoft software. Thanks, Linux Format. I really needed someone to rate to. So, very important point, a great email. Yeah.
Good that he got it off his chest, because it sounds like it could have ended badly if he didn't.
Yeah, there was more as well, but I don't think we've got time. So thanks, Gary. I won't say your surname. Right, so another one from Phil from Southend. After reading your privacy guide in this month's Linux format, that's Beat the CIA, I thought I'd share another little gem that would work well with the measures you listed. MVPS hosts. It's a list of sites that you append to your hosts file that blocks all manner of not only malware sites, but also tracking sites by redirecting the host lookups to your loopback address. It's great. Often I see huge swathes of error areas as advertising sections of pages where sites where the site is loading content from another source and this is being blocked. Also, if you click through on Google Ads and that appear at the top of your searches, you get a page not found error as it tries to redirect you. Obviously, this may cause the odd problem here and there, but generally it's fine. It's fine. The only two lines I found to need to comment out were a couple there. I can put it online. So that's Phil's tip on increasing the security of your system. It sounds like a great one.
Yeah, it does. It's not one I've come across before, but from the sound of it, it would work.
It makes a lot of sense. It's a bit like those blockers people use when they're using a tracker.
Yeah.
So excellent. Thanks to both of you for your Speak Your Brains. As ever, send me more for next time and I'll read them out.
That brings us neatly to Open Ballot. Our question this fortnight is, should Apache abandon OpenOffice? Now, the context for this is that... is that
Apache? It took me a while to get that. Apache, of course.
The context for this is that OpenOffice used to be dead good, and then all the developers left to LibreOffice, and now they're more or less the same thing. But one of them is independent and cool, and OpenOffice is just the development. It does more or less the same thing as LibreOffice, but the development is hampered by a less permissive, maybe a more permissive licensing structure than that used by LibreOffice. So they're both, you know, ploughing their own lonely furrows. But should the developers get together? Should they say no? Let's not work on OpenOffice anymore. Let's be cool. Let's join forces with LibreOffice and create the one office suite to rule them all. So here's what you thought. Toe71 says, yes, of course they should be merged. Why waste effort on the same code base for two versions of the same thing? It might be better if there were fewer distros as well, for exactly the same reasons.
No, we need choice.
We need choice. We need choice, apparently. The Penguin with No Name says, merge. And this is a counter to what Toe said. Multiple distros survive because they mostly take different approaches and satisfy different needs. If LibreOffice and OpenOffice are two teams treading the same path, then it's just madness.
I thought that was a really great nuanced point.
Yeah.
I thought someone else later on as well says about how there's not a lack of choice in the office suite space, but because there's Abbey Word and Numeric and all of this as well, that LibreOffice and OpenOffice are the same.
That was Ray Kios. He says, we already have some competition in the form of Abbey Word and Numeric and Kof or Caligra Suite on the other. That makes competition between such similar projects as LibreOffice and OpenOffice seem redundant. He also says, I can't say I've tried Caligra yet. Perhaps someone else has. Well, that's a fortuitous point, because we actually have a review of that in this issue. Is it a two-page review?
It is, a two-page review by Shashank.
Two pages devoted to KDE. So, yes, haters.
Two pages out of the 116 pages.
Anyway, it's a big release, it's a big important project, yeah. And Critter,
that sounds fantastic.
Is excellent, because it has native CMYK support.
Critter is incredible, it's brilliant, and it's a pity that it's tarred with the same brush as the Caligra suite.
Wow. Competition is good, says Anonymous Penguin. Not verified. Well, obviously, competition is good. I love cereals.
Does someone really say that?
Someone really said that.
That's got to be Mike.
Well, I don't know. Any thoughts from you, Ben?
I mean, it's popped up a few times, but the licensing issue, I mean, it depends how you feel about free software, but I think there is some value in having the OpenOffice under a more permissive license.
By more permissive, we mean businesses can take the source code and make changes without redistributing their changes.
Yes.
That's what we mean by more permissive.
Yeah, so more BSD style than GPL style.
Yeah.
So yeah, for exactly that reason, a business could pick it up and move it in a new direction.
But, I mean, there is that
argument, but I do think IBM are there arguing, you know, IBM have offered to support LibreOffice and give all the changes they made in Lotus Office, Symfony, whatever, to LibreOffice. They seem unimpinged by the GPL nature of it.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's great that companies want to do that, but I'm saying if a company, if you as a new startup may want to take a whole new direction in Office Suites and create something that genuinely isn't out there at the moment, and they could start with the Open Office code base to do that.
Yeah, but if they're getting the, I feel that if they're getting the Open Office code base for free, then they ought to be redistributing that and sharing it and building on it and letting everyone else enjoy the same benefits they enjoyed to get started.
I mean, I could imagine that there are some, there would be some Open Office developers who donated their code back in the day that would be quite annoyed if they did that. But
yeah, this is what Michael Meeks was talking about at Fosdem, about the impact of the license change. It's just completely reinvigorated the amount of contributors that they're having,
yeah,
because they know that their code isn't just going to be taken and used to, you know, prop up Larry Ellison's yachts in his dry dock.
It just seems a completely unacceptable way to behave.
Yeah, and just on the comments about merging, I'm not entirely sure there's much to merge, to be honest. LibreOffice has moved a lot further than OpenOffice was.
And OpenOffice didn't move for years.
No.
For years, nothing happened, and things are only happening probably because LibreOffice is pushing ahead.
Yeah.
I think it's insanity that there are two projects that are the same. I think it makes the whole free software movement look bad.
Yeah.
Sure, keep OpenOffice as a backup, and if companies want to use it and change it and do whatever they want, fine, maybe that is enough for its existence. But for everything else, I think it's so important we have a unified front.
Coming back to what you said, Ben, about there not being very much to merge, Phelan Whiteley says, OpenOffice.org needs a redirect to LibreOffice.org. Job done.
Yeah.
The only thing I've found is that people don't realise that OOO is essentially dead. Oracle and Sun destroyed the project. It's a waste of resources. OOO was never a good name, but it does have brand recognition, sometimes in the negative sense. LibreOffice could use a bit of marketing. OpenOffice has long been festering away.
One thing I do love about LibreOffice versus OpenOffice is that LibreOffice is two separate words, each capitalised as proper nouns. There's none of this messing around with camel case naming and stuff like that. That really annoys me.
Yes, it is annoying.
Yeah, I always hated the .org at the end.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Utterly bad. So, DM319 says the main competition is Microsoft Office. Open source has a hard time enough trying to maintain compatibility and simultaneously provide a superior product. At the moment, all effort needs to go into improving LibreOffice, but if it gets beyond 50% market share, I'm happy for someone to fork it then. At the moment, OpenOffice just needs to get dumped. A comment here from Neil Bothwick.
Hey, Neil.
Hey, Neil. He says, Apache are unlikely to abandon OpenOffice, but OpenOffice may well abandon Apache. Open source projects largely survive on quality. With no significant marketing budgets, the cream generally floats to the top. If LibreOffice is so superior to OpenOffice, which, you know, we all think it is, the latter will simply wither and die. Volunteer developers are not going to want to work on a second-rate project when they can just as easily transfer their knowledge and skills to the competition. So this question will resolve itself in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I mean,
yeah,
to a certain extent, I think it already has.
That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, there's so few developers working on OpenOffice now.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. So the last sentence of that carries on to another page. He says, the comparative release cycles already show how this is working.
Yeah.
Yes. It looks like we're all pretty much in agreement, really.
Yeah.
And I started totting up the votes for and votes against, but I stopped when I realised that Toey71 had voted twice. So
cheater.
Yeah. So, yeah. One comment, actually, from Aegis says, I don't care what they do so long as one of them adds a live word count to the status bar.
Hey, according to my interview with Michael Meeks, that is now a feature in LibreOffice.
Is it?
Not necessarily in the status bar, but you can get a live word count.
Yeah.
So.
Well, further down in the comments, Qubit says that it looks like LibreOffice does have a live word count plugin here, and then gives a URL, which I'm sure we can add to our extensive podcast notes. So, yes, there it is. I found that my dad's got OpenOffice on his laptop. He asked me if I could install Microsoft Word on it. And I just, I was like, well, you've got one here already. Brilliant. He had no idea that the logo, the icon of, it's like a blue circle with a
seagull on it.
A seagull coming at you from out of the rising sun. And we had no idea that that was an office suite, so just never even clicked on it to find out what it was.
How wouldn't he guess that's an office suite? I mean, honestly.
Well, the icon doesn't look like an office suite.
I'm joking. Being facetious.
Yeah. I know, the man's a fool.
Okay, well, that's it. We've run out of time again.
Well, wait, one more thing.
Oh, you've got one more
thing? I have, finally, after many months, I have one more thing. A few months ago, in the magazine, we did a cover story on Raspberry Pi and said that the foundation had kindly offered us one to give to readers as a prize. And we got a ton of entries to the competition. And we finally have our two Raspberry Pis, and I'm giving one of them away to Nicholas Cater. He's trying to knock together a vertical axis wind turbine. He's doing it as much as he can from scrap materials. He needs something to, he needs the Raspberry Pi to create an anemometer to track wind speed and duration, and then something to, direct the generated power initially to a battery, then to, then a secondary battery, and then finally to some load device to take up surplus power, like an immersion heater or something. I think it sounds like a really cool project. I'm hoping he's going to document it, and I'm going to ask him if he'll consider putting something on the website about it. But yeah, it sounds like a great project. I hope he has great fun using the Raspberry Pi to do it. It sounds like the perfect kind of thing that it was designed for. So looking forward to sending it your way. Congratulations, Nicholas.
Brilliant. Thanks, John. Thanks, everyone. Thanks to you for listening, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.